This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this post-Super Tuesday edition, the GOP presidential candidates are preparing for another debate, which will take place tomorrow night in Michigan. But the pundits are still debating what the results of Super Tuesday mean. Well, we'll join that debate a little bit later when we open up the phone lines. Also, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments today in Whole Woman's Health versus Helderstedt, a case that could undermine the future of Texas's abortion clinic regulations. FRC's Kathy Roos was in the courtroom, and she joins us. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott was also at the Supreme Court today, and he'll weigh in on this important case. And he'll talk about what we can expect from the Republicans in the Senate when it comes to filling the vacancy left by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. And in the free-to-believe category, parents in Brevard County, Florida, decided they and not gay activists would decide the policies that governed the schools their children attend. Parent and pastor David Myers joins me with the details. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, the topics that we're covering. You can also sign up for my daily update there at the website, TonyPerkins.com. That's an email that comes out Monday through Friday right there in your inbox, keeps you up to date on three or four top issues that affects faith, family, and freedom. Also, we have alerts that gives you specifics on what you can do to make a difference on these critical issues. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T Perkins. All right, if you're new to Washington Watch, let me give you this phone number a little bit later when we open up the phone lines. This is a number to call, 866-372-7234. Jot that number down. All right, this morning, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in what may be one of the most important abortion cases in decades. As we've discussed on the program throughout the week, House Bill 2, which became law in Texas, requires doctors, among other things, requires doctors to have admitting privileges at a hospital within 30 miles of their clinic. Now, this is obviously for safety and health purposes. In essence, what it does, it requires abortion clinics to abide by the same regulations that other ambulatory surgical centers have to live by. The idea there is to ensure the well-being of women who go in there if they experience an emergency. Well, this all came to light, and this really, we had a wave of laws like this pass the states after the abortionist from Philadelphia, Kermit Gosnell, was exposed in the horrible conditions in that clinic. And that's what this resulted from. Well, this morning, the court, which is, there's eight justices with the death of Antonin Scalia, the court seemed to be split on the issue without the voice of Justice Scalia. So we'll have to wait to see what the conclusion will be of the remaining eight justices. Joining me now with analysis from inside the courtroom, FRC Senior Fellow for Legal Studies, Kathy Roos, was there this morning in the courtroom, and she joins us now. Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony.
All right. Give us your impressions from the oral arguments today before the court.
Well, I'll tell you the things that are clear. And what is clear watching the court this morning is that the four liberals on the court, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, cannot wait to strike down this law as unconstitutional. They made no bones about where they are on health and safety regulations. They think that they were simply a ruse and that Texas is just trying to target abortion clinics. So the real question, unfortunately, again, is where is Kennedy going to go? Mm-hmm. If Kennedy sides with them, we lose, of course. If Kennedy sides with Thomas and Thomas and Alito in that group, then the best we can do is a 4-4 But that's not bad because a 4-4 will allow the lower court ruling to be upheld, and the lower court upheld the regulations. So a 4-4 split is a good ruling for Texas and for the precedent that that will set.
Well, we're most likely to see, if that's the case, if the court is split on it, we're most likely to see this come back before the court again, because there are other similar laws that are being challenged. In fact, Louisiana's law is being challenged. It just had a favorable ruling before the Fifth Circuit, and that could be appealed to the Supreme Court as well, could it not?
It could. In fact, they are. I learned today that they are appealing, and so that case is on its way. There's another case out of Mississippi that was put on hold while this case went forward. So, yes, the case would not be over. The question would not be over if it's a 4-4 split. But we would sort of live on to find another day if it's a 4-4 split. And one interesting thing that may allow the court to get out of ruling on the merits altogether is that Justice Kennedy himself twice brought up the suggestion of does it make any sense to remand the case, send it back down to a lower court so we can gather more evidence? He said that twice, and he seemed to have a sympathetic ear on the part of the Chief Justice, because the defenders of these abortion clinics kept making claims like, oh, the law is forcing clinics to close. Oh, all these clinics are closed, and then women won't be able to be served, and so on and so forth. And Kennedy and the Chief Justice kept saying, well, where's the evidence? And show me in the record. That's not in the record. There's no evidence to support your claims. So Kennedy said, well, maybe we ought to go back down to the lower court and get some more evidence. So there's another kind of third way that we could go, and that wouldn't be terrible either. We could live on to fight another day if they do that.
So you're suggesting, Kathy, that what they were saying about wanting further evidence is that the proponents or the opponents of these laws who have brought the suits are saying that this is designed and will have the effect of closing down all these clinics, denying women access to abortion facilities. Is that what they're claiming?
Exactly. That there would not be enough places for women to go and get abortions if this law were to go into effect.
Of course, one of the counter arguments, or maybe not a counter argument, but an issue that was brought before the court, which is really the genesis behind these laws, is the issue of women's health and well-being. And so would those four liberal justices on the court sacrifice the health of women just to ensure that abortion goes unregulated?
Right. Well, and that's exactly the question. The discussion did come up that, if the purpose of these laws is to improve the health and safety of women, then that is squarely within court precedents, in particular the Casey decision that Kennedy himself authored. So there's a nice Kennedy hook. You know, there's a reason for him to do the right thing. This could be the continuing legacy of his Casey decision back in 1992, where he and others held that there should be allowed to be reasonable regulations on abortion. And the most reasonable of regulations is keeping women safe. I mean, how can you argue with that? So,
the opponents of these regulations can't say just because they're unwilling to invest the money to bring these clinics up to standard so that the health of women is in fact protected. How can they use that as a defense against the laws? I mean, you could use that on anything if that's the case.
That is my biggest problem with the other side's argument. And unfortunately, they didn't seem to be called on that in court today. I would have loved for that particular argument to be made, and it really wasn't made. I mean, all the liberal justices just kind of took as whole cloth the argument that, well, these are forcing these clinics to close. And it really wasn't brought out in oral argument that maybe the clinics are just refusing to follow the law. Maybe they're just refusing to spend any more money to improve safety for the women, you know? So
yeah,
very good point.
Yeah, we've talked about that this week on the program because I authored one of the we were talking earlier in this week, we had Mike Johnson, who actually argued the Louisiana case before the court there. And he actually was helpful to me back in 1999 when we passed one of the first clinic regulation acts. And it did result in some clinics closing, but those clinics closed because they refused to come up to the standards because they didn't want to invest the money their facilities, which, you know, you wouldn't treat. A veterinary clinic has to meet certain standards, and you don't say, oh, well, just because you don't want to invest the money, we're going to let you continue to operate. I mean, we have standards.
Right. You know, along the lines of standards, I was very happy to see that the Gosnell situation came up in oral argument maybe half a dozen times. You know, anytime we're able to talk about Gosnell, it's the other side is in a bad place. So it came up a few times. The liberal justices were ready to try to smack it down and stop that conversation. Well, that's Pennsylvania. This is Texas. That wouldn't happen in Texas. And that couldn't happen. And that's not relevant, but it kept coming up and up and up. And then finally, Justice Alito said, well, all right, let's look at Texas. And he stated that Whole Women's Health, which is the name of the abortion centers at issue, was inspected, and they did find holes large enough for rats to come through, and they did find sanitary problems. So you can dismiss Gosnell, but there are real problems that are being addressed in Texas. So I was so grateful for Alito to bring that up.
Well, even I saw that where they made the comparison to Philadelphia or to Pennsylvania, but they had regulations as well on the books that required inspections. They just weren't enforced. So I don't see how you can say it's any different. They still had some regulations, or minimal, and just because officials weren't enforcing them, they've put new teeth into to the laws. And I think, you know, states have a right and I think a responsibility to be proactive in addressing situations that led to the horrors there in Philadelphia.
And that's exactly what Solicitor General, the point he made. He was basically making the point, we don't have to wait till we have a Gosnell in Texas. Once, you know, the world learned about that kind of horror, we're taking preemptive steps to make sure that that doesn't happen to women in Texas. I mean, it's perfectly logical if you are willing to look at logic. But when it comes to this issue, so many lawyers and judges and justices just aren't willing to. And So the takeaway, I mean, I don't think anybody came out of the courtroom sort of cheering, wow, that went well, because we know we've got four lined up against us, and we only have three on our side, and there's Kennedy. So, and he really didn't, you know, even when he's very verbal, you can't really predict how he's going to vote from what he says. But he really was basically quiet most of the arguments. So it's really a big question mark where he's going to come down.
Kathy, we're up against a break. Thanks so much for being with us. But one final question for you. What happens if you get a decision 5-3 against the regulations?
That means obviously the law and regulations are struck down as unconstitutional. And any similar law or regulation would be deemed unconstitutional. And,
Can they limit their decision just to Texas, or would it be far-reaching beyond Texas?
No, it would be based on the U.S. Constitution, so it would be federalized.
All right. Kathy Ruth, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, this Kathy Ruth. She is a senior fellow for legal studies here at the Family Research Council. To find out more, you can go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You can keep up with her on her blog. All right, still to come, much more to cover. We're going to be talking with South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. He was up at the court today as well. And this brings back into focus the vacancy on the Supreme Court. What will the Republicans in the Senate do? We'll talk about it. Don't go away. Fear not. If you've read the Bible, you've read those words. But have you ever paused to meditate upon their meaning? In almost every case where God spoke those words, it preceded something extraordinary being done through ordinary people. God told people like Abraham, Gideon, and the apostles to reject their fears because fear holds us back from experiencing all that God wants to do in us and through us. We can't operate in fear and in faith. Faith says advance, fear says retreat. Do you want to know how to live with no fear? That's the focus of my new book, No Fear, Real stories of a courageous new generation standing for truth. You'll be inspired and hopefully challenged by the real-life stories of young people who are standing up for Jesus in an increasingly hostile culture. You'll also read the biblical accounts of those who stood for God in their day and learn how to stand in a way that honors Christ. Learn to live with a holy reverence for God, and you'll have no fear of man. For more information, go to TonyPerkins.com.
Hope Reigns will again serve the town of LaPlace, Louisiana. The ministry responded to the needs of LaPlace after Hurricane Isaac, and that same community has just been hit by a tornado. Here's 8 Days of Hope President Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
To volunteer to help the tornado victims of LaPlace, Louisiana, please email hoperains@8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this effort. For more information, visit 8daysofhope.com. And please pray for this relief effort and for the families affected by this tornado. Hope Reigns is a ministry division of 8 Days of Hope.
We're in the financial business. We manage a couple of trusts and some estates and, of course, our own monies, too.
Courtney Trotter talks about the charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation.
I understand annuities about as much as anyone, I guess, can. So I just felt the charitable gift annuity was a win-win situation for many people that still are generating income and still have assets. Because you never know when you may have to draw down on something like that. And if you don't ever have to, then it's even a better gift to get to a really good foundation like AFA. A very solid investment, a good way to help do the Lord's work, and it's there to help us as well.
Find out if the charitable gift annuity can work for you by calling the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. All right, the one unoccupied seat at the Supreme Court is not just an issue in the Texas abortion case. It is an issue that is likely to occupy a large portion of the attention in the United States Senate as President Obama attempts to tilt the court to the left on his way out the door. But GOP leadership has said, not a chance. Well, will they in fact stand their ground? Joining with his thoughts on what he said at the court today as he was up before the Supreme Court on the Texas bill and is involved in the discussions in the United States Senate is the senator from South Carolina, Tim Scott. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be on the radio with you.
Well, thanks for joining us. First, I want to get your impressions of what took place there at the court today.
Well, it certainly was encouraging to see so many enthusiastic supporters of life investing their time and energy to make sure that our voices are heard throughout this country and, frankly, hopefully that it's reverberating within the walls of the Supreme Court as we look forward to hopefully a positive decision on behalf of the Texas decision. It would be fantastic for us to continue to encourage and support decisions that help us to make sure that more unborn children have the opportunity to walk on American soil.
You know, I know life is an important issue for you. It's clear in your record and the things that you say. But I want to ask you this question as the only African-American senator serving in the United States Senate on the Republican side. And we see a disproportionate number of abortions in the African-American community. Should we not hear more voices speaking out from the black community about abortion?
I certainly think that we should have more voices, more elected officials in the Senate and in the House that are speaking out on behalf of life issues. And without any question, the African-American community should have more voices We should have more voices in the white community, the Hispanic community. The fact of the matter is, if we're looking for a way to live out the gospel of Jesus Christ, it absolutely requires every believer to be vocal and to be supportive. And for me, as more than a looking at the disproportionate impact and thinking about the founding principles from my perspective of Planned Parenthood, and they're skewed towards at the African American community in a negative way. The truth is that as we stand together collectively under the notion of 1 Corinthians 13 in love, providing hope and using our faith to do so, then we stand together in a way that will be powerful.
I mean, Senator Scott, you've shared your personal testimony publicly. You and I have spoken over dinner as well about it. But I mean, when I think of your story and how you have had opportunity and how you've overcome obstacles, I mean, I think there's future Tim Scotts out there that are literally being targeted by Planned Parenthood and the abortion industry.
Yeah, there's no doubt that we absolutely should find ourselves making sure that the full potential of every American is experienced and appreciated. And the only way to do that is to stand and strong, as you are doing and as so many folks did today. But I think the clearest way to put it is anyone and everyone should stand for life. And if we do that, more stories like mine will percolate to the surface and will have major positive impact on our country. As I have experienced, that no matter where you start from, it's where you go that
right.
determines the quality of the experience. And frankly, if we could learn the lessons of our Savior and then implement them in the way that we live, our world would be a better place. And frankly, we would have infinitely fewer abortions, and more people would have the ability and the opportunity to share their success story, as I found my success through becoming a member of the family of Christ.
Absolutely, and you have an inspiring story, which I think should give hope to all people, because, as you said, it's the gospel of Jesus Christ that gives us hope and purpose, but it helps us overcome many of the obstacles that are just kind of natural to life. To some, they're more pronounced than others, and there are certainly portions of our society and segments that have greater obstacles than others. But I mean, you're a testimony of how those obstacles can be overcome in a very positive way that impacts the life of others. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. Senator, I want to transition for a moment, if I can, to the issue of the Supreme Court. Obviously, it's important. You were there this morning as they heard the case, the oral arguments on this case out of Texas. But the big story continues to be the vacancy on the Supreme Court. And what will happen in the United States Senate if the president, he says he's going to, if he makes a nomination?
Well, Tony, I think you led off with this issue, and I think you said it well. And unfortunately, you used the word that I think we have earned, unfortunately, you using, which is if the Senate does what we say we're going to do. And frankly, promises made should be promises kept. There's a reason why we should focus on the principle of keeping the vacancy there until the new president is sworn in, because the principle is far more important than any person that the president would put up.
The
fact of the matter is the American people finally have an opportunity to weigh into what perhaps will be one of the longest standing decisions of any president, which is placing another member to the Supreme Court. And it's very important that we get this right, and the only way for us to have a chance to get it right is to let the American people weigh in with their votes for who they decide will be the next president of the United States. If we do what we should do, which is wait until the next, at least after the next inauguration, we will be in a position as a nation to understand why we are heading in the right direction or what, pray tell, went wrong, and now we're heading in the wrong direction. But at least the American people will have weighed in. I am hopeful that with that as our principal position, that next year we will elect a conservative who understands the necessity of having a Scalia Jr., so to speak.
I hope you're right. And by the way, for the record, I think the Republicans will stand their ground on this. So you have my vote of confidence, okay?
Thank you.
Don't disappoint me.
Absolutely.
All right, Tim. Thanks so much for being with us. Tim Scott, Senator of South Carolina, a great guy. Really is. Great testimony and doing a great job. You find out more, go to his website. You can follow it, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. And send him a note if you want. All right, when we come back, there's still more to come, so don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, one of the things that I am watching this week is oil inventories. Why? Because everybody else is watching it. And it looks like the market is being dictated primarily due to these inventory numbers. Everyone was expecting that the inventories were going to be relatively low. As a matter of fact, some were thinking it was going to be the same as the week before last, which was 2.6 million barrels added to inventories. And the markets reacted on that assumption for the first 2 days of the week. Didn't happen. The U.S. Energy Information Agencies or administration put out their number, 10.4 million barrels. That throws our stockpile over 108 million barrels of stock. The closest we've ever seen to that is 500 million barrels. That was in 1930. So this is an all-time record. And we're getting news that OPEC has no intention of cutting any production. Yes, American fracking companies are cutting production for the first time in a year, but it's not going to have the impact that we need. The other impact on our economy and on the markets, of course, is Super Tuesday. Yes, this should be impacting our markets either in a positive or negative way based on the candidates and their economic plan. Now, the candidate that seems to be winning on the conservative side, we don't know what the economic plan is there other than, trust me, it's going to be good. We need to see some details. We do know the other candidate that is running in second place. We do know that he is a God-fearing man. We do know that he is certainly an outsider. And we can look at the details of his economic plan. And we better be thinking about that as we go to our primary polls.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at TPerkins. All right, still to come in the next segment, we're going to continue this debate. It's not really a debate. We're just going to have a discussion about what last night's results from Super Tuesday meant. What do you think? All the talking heads are giving their opinions. I want to know your opinion. All right, we're going to talk about that. But first, this program, we talk a lot about our first freedom, the freedom to believe and live according to your beliefs. People across the country are learning that when we the people stand, we can send a message to those who are pushing this anti-faith, anti-freedom agenda. And that's exactly what happened in Florida when a school district was considering adding gender identity and sexual orientation to the district's anti-discrimination and equal employment policies. Well, the parents said, whoa, wait a minute. They stood up, and the pastors and the parents, they prevailed. It's an example of what you too can do. Join me now with the latest on this story is the senior pastor of the First Pentecostal Church in Palm Bay, Pastor David Myers. Pastor Myers, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
Well, Pastor, I'm going to start with the fact that you have a daughter that's in the public school system, and this came to your attention. You were involved in this. You spoke before the school board at the meeting. What was your message to the school board?
Well, Tony, you're right. I do have a girl that's in first grade in the public school system. And as you mentioned, I pastor a church, and I was a concerned parent and pastor. And we had received word that the school board was attempting to add these policies that would give protective status for sexual orientation and gender identity but as you well know, would discriminate against people with sincerely held religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And so word got out, and as we were leaving to go to the meeting where they would have public comments, we had heard that there were five school board members, and four of them had already committed to vote for this, so it was a lost cause.
Wow.
Well, I said, you know, we need to go down there and we need to speak anyhow, because when I was in law school, I had the opportunity to study under Antonin Scalia, and one thing that he told us that I never forgotten, that is, even when you're in the minority, you need to speak with authority. So I said, well, we're going to go down there and we're going to speak anyhow, and we're going to stand against this, and if we lose, we lose. Well, when I got there, the place was full of people. I mean, the Christians, the parents, the community, everybody turned down, and everyone spoke, and it was 95% opposed to this, and the school board ended up totally changing their position, and all five of the school board members voted against it going forward, and that was totally because of the turnout of the community.
That, Pastor Myers, has to be extremely encouraging to those who took the time to get involved, even though they were told it was a lost cause.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that was so encouraging to me, was that the Christians and the community showed up. Because, Tony, a lot of times we don't win these things because either, one, we're not informed, or number two, we're informed, but we don't think that our showing up is going to matter. But I saw firsthand where when people get together and say enough is enough, because this was going to allow people of the opposite gender to be able to go in, like if a boy in high school wanted to go into a girl's locker room and change clothes, that there would be no way for school officials to stop them, even though they were anatomically a male. If he was saying he felt like a female that day, then he couldn't even be questioned on it. And, you know,
and those who would question it would be punished.
That's correct. That's correct. In fact, there is policies that go out, and I got a copy of it. They sent it to every school board official, a group out of Orlando called Equality Florida, and they sent out what they call schools in transition, and it's to give, you know, specific policy guidelines. And it said that schools were not to question any individual. They were not to be the gatekeeper of any individual, whether they had an ulterior motive or not, that would say that they feel like that they're transitioning in their gender and they should go into another. And they said plainly in this policy manual that if a student was uncomfortable with a transgender person or a transgender identity individual coming into that opposite gender locker room, that the individual that felt uncomfortable should go to a different restroom. But at no time should an individual with gender issues be forced to go into a separate restroom. So it's clear that people with sincerely held religious beliefs are the ones being discriminated against.
Right. This is crazy, and it's happening across the country. But what happened there in your school district is what happens when parents and community leaders say, whoa, this is crazy. We're not going to put up with this. But it takes people willing to stand up. Pastor Myers, we're out of time, but I want to say thank you for joining us this afternoon and giving us an update. But also, I want to thank you for providing leadership in your community. It made all the difference, and I hope this inspires your community to be vigilant and to be watchmen for what's still, I'm sure, to come, because these folks don't rest. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tony, for the work you do.
All right, Pastor David Myers, a great story, and it is representative of what happens when people stand up. Now, I'm sure that the left probably cannot figure him out, a Pentecostal pastor who studied under Antonin Scalia. Now, that's got the left scratching their head. All right, when we come back, we're going to open up the phone line, so don't go away. We're back with your phone calls after the break here on Washington Watch.
To visit the Lincoln Memorial, that is an awe-inspiring moment on our tour of Washington, D.C., the Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and Mount Vernon, the home of George and Martha Washington. As you look up at the statue of Abraham Lincoln, you turn around and you look back towards the Washington Monument and the United States Capitol. down the Washington Mall. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. That's just one visit on one day in our tour of our nation's capital. We call it a spiritual heritage tour. We're going there. We're also going to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate trip that's back-to-back. You can do one or you can do both. For all the information on these spiritual heritage tours in June and September, visit spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
You slip away for a weekend of relaxation, but waking you find yesterday's scratchy throat feels like a fiery furnace. Your weekend could be up in flames, but for MD Live, 24/7 access to board-certified physicians anywhere. MD Live is used by many major corporations and by the American Family Association to augment employees' health care benefits. To find out if MD Live makes sense for you, visit hcbenefits.com. That's hcbenefits.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Can Christians support building a wall on the border to control immigration? Pope Francis seems to think not, although many of the folks running for president would disagree, as a controversy started to unfold when the head of the Catholic Church suggested that Donald Trump might not be a Christian because, quoting, a person who thinks only about building walls and not building bridges is not Christian, unquote. My local church happened to be studying the book of Nehemiah, which of course is all about God ordaining Nehemiah to build a wall around Jerusalem. As we consider our national security, these words of Nehemiah are true for us today. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. As Christians, we should share Christ's love with all, yet we should also follow God's word to protect our families and our homeland. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation. We're talking about the results of Super Tuesday. They were super turnout. While the Democrats struggle to generate any real enthusiasm, the GOP is blowing past primary records in one state after another. In Virginia alone, outside of D.C., Republicans cast more than 1 million votes, crushing the mark set in 2000 by more than 50%. The story was much the same in Tennessee, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Arkansas, and more. I was in back in my home state of Louisiana last night to participate in the caucuses, which helped select the delegates based upon what comes out of Saturday's primary. And it was a strong turnout for that. Experts say the GOP's intensity is at historic levels. And of course, I mean, what do you expect after 7 years of Obama's lawlessness? I doubt we're going to see any letting up on that trend. Now, some would say that it's Donald Trump that's driving it. There's no question he's having a part of that. But here's where we stand after last night. Now remember, a candidate has to get in the Republican side. I'm only talking about the Republican side. If you want to find out what's happening in the Democratic Party, tune into MSNBC. The road to get the Republican nomination requires 1,237 delegates. All right. Now here's where we are as of last night. It's actually there's less certainty than what the pundits were predicting. All right, Trump ended the night with 319 delegates. Ted Cruz, 226. Senator Marco Rubio, 110. And by the way, Dr. Carson apparently is stepping out of the race. He says he doesn't see a way forward. He is not going to be at the debate tomorrow night in Michigan. Now, one thing, and let me give the number out again, 866-372-7234. Hold on there, Jeff. In just a minute, I'm going to be coming to you. One of the things that we've seen, and we saw it yesterday, was an increase in the turnout of quote-unquote evangelicals. Now, that's self-described evangelicals. But this has left a lot of people, you know, scratching their heads over these evangelical trends. People are saying, well, it's just because they're frustrated, they're fearful, they're angry. And I get that. It's true. There's no question that's true. But most of these polls are based on self-identification. Now, the Barna Group points this out, that some of these quote-unquote evangelicals are not evangelicals at all. If you want to understand where true evangelicals stand, you ask the churchgoers. All right, now, just hang with me. This is based upon reports from the Barna Group and Reuters and others. Reuters and others have found that church attendance distinctly decreases evangelical support for Trump. Now, this is according to the Barna Group, okay, who has the least religious supporters among the GOP candidates. Now, Barna's definition, the Barna Group, their definition of evangelical is more rigorous. You know, to qualify, voters have to meet 9 key faith criteria, ranging from a personal relationship to Christ to agreement on who God is. Now, this is historic. I mean, they've used this criteria for this definition for a long time. But using that filter, true evangelicals, the group notes that, quote, whose faith hinges on obedience to God's commands are far more interested in the character of candidates than other segments. So looking at the election through Barna's lens, the mirage of Trump's broad evangelical support begins to fall away. Quote, overall, far more evangelicals view Trump as very unfavorable than very favorable, the survey notes of his minus 15 net score. Researchers found a 38% percentage point difference between the extreme ends of Trump's favorability spectrum. When Barna asked its 869 survey respondents to choose their favorite candidate, evangelicals who identified as Republicans split between Cruz, 38%, and Carson, 35%, trailed by Rubio, 14%, and Trump, 11%. Practicing Christians also chose Cruz first, 30%, followed by Carson, 20%, and Trump, 18%, Rubio, 15%. Now, that's according to the Barna Group. And I think it provides some explanation, although I think it's really more of a hybrid. I think part of it is fear and frustration that, unfortunately, evangelicals, Christians, have not guarded their heart against and they're reacting to. And then I also think that earlier this week, that term evangelicals become somewhat elastic. But anyway, I want you to weigh in. 866-372-7234, and we're going to go to Jeff in Louisiana. Jeff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, how's it going, Tony? My question actually doesn't have to do with Super Tuesday. I've actually been trying to get through and talk to you, ask you a question for a couple weeks now, and this is the first time I've actually been able to get through. I hope that's okay.
All right, well, if I like your question, I'll answer it. If not, I'll stick with Super Tuesday. Go ahead.
All right. I'd heard a lot of rumors over the last few months with different things that were going on that about how Donald Trump was really good friends with the Clintons whenever Bill was in office, and a lot of people were saying that they thought he was just running to try to split the GOP or to try to push more votes towards Hillary because he was such good friends with him. And I watched an interview with him recently, and his response to that was, he's a businessman. It was his job to get along with everyone. You know, he wasn't doing that because he actually liked them. He was just doing that because it was his job. And the other thing is, like, a couple months ago, I was a really strong supporter of Trump, but now with different things that I've seen with him, I'm actually leaning a lot more towards Ted Cruz. But he also said recently, I heard him say that, you know, it's going to be a little bit later on down the road, he'll start acting more presidential and he'll start showing respect for people more and stuff like that. I mean, what's your take on those two things? I mean, is it something that you think we can actually trust him on? Or, I mean, is
well,
it, what do you think?
I, Well, I think those are good questions, Jeff. Let me first say, I don't think that he's just in this to try to throw the race to Hillary. I don't think that. I think I did hear that months ago. That's what people were saying months ago. I think he's in this to win. I think he wants to be president of the United States. No question in my mind about that. And he's doing what he needs to do to win. So that's the answer to that. And secondly, I think his response that he's a businessman and he's doing what he's got to do, I do think that is correct. I think that's who he is. And that gives me some concern because not everything is a business deal. Some things are not negotiable. There are certain principles that are non-negotiable. Now, many things are, and I appreciate people who can make deals, who can negotiate, and who can sit down at the table. And you want people to come away as everybody wins, all right? And good negotiators do that. They don't dominate and make losers out of other people. And I think that's in part one of the reasons he's been successful. I have no doubt that he is a good negotiator and a deal maker. But I have seen many business people that have come into the political world and the skills don't transfer. They just don't. And there are certain, I mean, I'll tell you for one, I don't think there's the issue of life and the sanctity of human life is a non-negotiable. Now, what does that mean? I wouldn't negotiate on a Supreme Court justice. I want a candidate who's going to be president who that is a non-negotiable. They want a justice who is going to see the Constitution as it was written from the founder's perspective that we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which is in the Declaration. So, I mean, that's my take on it. I think you can trust Donald Trump to be Donald Trump. And I think what you have seen him do in the past is what he is going to do in the future. I think past performance, patterns of past performance. Okay, everybody gets a mulligan, okay? Everybody, I mean, people make mistakes. But do they continue to operate in a certain way? And I think you look at past performance, and it's the best indicator of future performance. Look at the record. All right, Jeff, appreciate the call. Thanks so much for listening to Washington Watch. Glad you finally got through. All right, let's go to the Lone Star State of Texas, where Rick is on the line. Rick, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. This is a first-time call for me. Appreciate your program very much.
Well, thank you.
And I'm a veteran also, Navy, though.
Well, thanks for your service, Rick.
You're welcome. On the Super Tuesday, I was mildly disappointed that Trump did so well. I'm like your previous caller. I don't trust him. Too much in the past dictates that he's maybe too much of a negotiator. Whatever's the best deal at the time is what he's going to go for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big Ted Cruz supporter. And I just... And I realize God's still in control of this nation, but it's just sad we're in a position we're in right now. And the next president, as with you, I hope he will pull in just a godly, righteous judge and push it on through. Because if Obama can push on through his, the next president I'll be able to do the same thing.
But they've got to be willing to fight, Rick. And you're absolutely right. And that's been the problem with Republicans is they've not been willing to fight for what they believe in and what they stand for in the same degree that the liberals and the Democrats do. So I agree with you on the court from a standpoint of we got to keep our eye on it. I think it is the single most important issue to be considered in this election. Without question, because we know now that there will be one justice that will be replaced and probably two, maybe even three. Rick, thanks so much for calling in. Great to have you listen to the program. 866-372-7234. Got to work in a couple more calls here. Let's go to Missouri, where Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
Good. I'm doing all right. got a theory that I wanted to kind of get your thoughts. Russell Moore's love it. But he had some pretty good points with respect to the word evangelical. What are your thoughts on the use of that word in this election cycle? My thoughts are that typically people are self-identifying more so on ideological and party lines. That, you know, if they found a church once, if they're Republican, got conservative political views, then they're evangelical, and that it's got nothing to do necessarily with their commitment to Christ, being born again, and things of that nature. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Mark, I actually think you're right. I think that probably is part of it. And look, that's on the one hand, that's not a bad thing. What has happened here is that, you know, evangelicals who have been marginalized, and think about this for a moment, folks, okay? And not all news is bad news, right? I mean, there's some things here we got to filter through and we got to use discernment. But evangelicals have been marginalized, condemned, and, you know, shoved to the outskirts of society to hide in the shadows. I mean, you know, look, they've tried to make fun of them. Look at how Hollywood treats evangelicals, all right? That's the backdrop. Then you have all of these people coming out to elections self-identifying as evangelicals. That's actually quite encouraging, if you ask me. Now, as Mark's point was, that's driven by other factors, not their theological holdings. As we talked about with the Barner Group, which has a very narrow 9-point definitive description of what it means to be evangelical. So, you know, when we're having a Bible study, yeah, I want to make sure we're all on the same page from that standpoint. And I do think it's the flip side of this, why it needs to be corrected, is that you have people who are self-identifying as evangelicals that may not be going to church on a regular basis, may not hold to a true evangelical theological view. And so they are trending in a different direction, and that's being interpreted by the media to say, well, see, evangelicals don't really care about the moral issues any longer. They don't care about the foundational issues. They don't really care about character. And that's not true. Evangelicals, in the true sense of the word, as Barna's poll and others, Reuters and others, who asked the question, how often do you attend church, found the same thing. That those issues still matter. But, again, the silver lining here is more people want to be identified as evangelicals, and I hope more evangelicals are turning out to vote. But, folks, here's what we've got to do. Let's influence our friends, both from a theological standpoint with the truth of the gospel, but also the reality of the political world in which we live and the facts about the candidates. And we can help you do both. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. We've got a voter guide up there. Download it. Pass it out to your friends. Take it to your fellow church members. Use it. Spread it widely. All right, folks. Sorry, folks, we're not going to get to the rest of you on the phone lines. But, Lord willing, there'll be tomorrow, and I hope you'll tune back in. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, even if it looks like the odds are overwhelming, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.